Hello. You have discovered the Felon File. FelonFile.com is a podcast exploration and discussion of law enforcement, history, issues, and incidents in the Appalachian Mountains and elsewhere. Felon File is hosted by Scott Lunsford, retired police detective, sergeant, author and researcher. The shade of blue stories for Felon File today are Catfish Out of Water, or The Battle of Hayes Bond. James William Catfish Cole versus the Lumbee Indian Tribe. Who won the battle? And why? Scott has some of those answers. And a few more questions. Background music. Hard Boiled, hosted by Purple Planet. The sponsor for today's episode of The Felon File is The Salty Heifer Home Store and More. The Consignments. Lairways. Antiques and Home Decor. Located at 75 Roy Edwards Lane, Mars Hill, North Carolina. Contact Trish, the owner, at thesaltyheifer75@gmail.com. Scott, we're recording.
Welcome back to another episode of Felon File. I'm glad you came back. Victoria, thanks for opening up the program for us tonight. And as Victoria said, we are a look at crime and punishment, the good guys, the bad guys, the not so highly smart guys, and the court system in the Appalachian Mountains and law enforcement in general, not only in the Appalachian Mountains, but beyond there. Now, today's Shade of Blue story, we're going to talk about Catfish Out of Water. Or, if you prefer the original story, how it was listed in the press, The Battle of Hayes Pond. Now, Robertson County, North Carolina, in the 1950s, was pretty much a tri-racial population. Each group has its own separate school system, with about 40,000 white individuals, about 30,000 Native Americans, and about 25,000 African Americans. In early 1958, a campaign of harassment against the Robertson Native American Lumbee Indian Tribe started up. Around January 13th of 58, a cross was burned in the lawn of a Lumbee Tribe family that had recently moved into a predominantly white neighborhood. Another similar incident occurred attempting to intimidate a Lumbee woman who was said to have been dating a white guy. The man behind such activities was a gentleman, and I use the term incredibly loosely, Catfish Cole. His intentions were to, quote, to put the Indians in their place and end race mixing. However, Cole considered the Lumbees to be a mongrel race. Accordingly, in 1957, when he started his campaign of harassment against them, he would point this out every chance he had. Cole grew up in Kingston, North Carolina, where he attended Granger High School. In 1943, he joined the military and served with the 559th Coast Artillery Unit in France during World War II. He was wounded and discharged in 1946 and received the Purple Heart and 5 combat stars. After leaving the military, he returned to his original employment, which happened to be carnival work, just like he used to do before World War II started. He also worked at driving a cab in Kingston, North Carolina, and this is where he acquired the nickname Catfish. In 1953, Catfish and his wife Carolyn started the Southern Bible College in Marion, South Carolina. He was ordained a minister by the Wayside Baptist Church in Summerfield, North Carolina in 1958. After he was ordained, Catfish ended up going on tour, basically, in North and South Carolina as a tent evangelist. A circus preacher is how some people refer to it. also doing Sunday morning radio program called the Free Will Hour on a local radio station. Unfortunately, he also became an active member of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan and moved up in leadership level all the way up to the Grand Dragon in both North Carolina and South Carolina. Cole's mixture of racial violence and religious rallies drew as many as 15,000 people at a time to some of the rallies that he put on. Cole gave inciting speeches against the Lumbee tribe. The time and location of rallies were not kept secret, and word quickly spread among the local Lumbee population when he decided that he was going to have a rally in Robertson County. Cole was quoted in the papers as saying, "There are about 30,000 half-breeds in Robertson County, and we will have a cross burning and scare them all up." The Klan planned a rally in Robertson County to be held just a few days later after he made that big statement in the press. On the night of January 13th, 1958, crosses were burned on the front lawns of the two families that we'd already talked about. And it was very obvious that Catfish and the Ku Klux Klan were behind all of this. The Klan's numbers had grown dramatically after the 1954 Supreme Court decision in Brown versus Board of Education, calling for the desegregation of public schools. Now, the court instructed schools to proceed with all deliberate speed at the desegregation. The Klan fought this as best as they could, as most cowards will often do, in the form of anonymous nighttime attacks. If not completely doing away with integration, their intention was to at least slow the process down some. On a cold January 18th, 1958, not too far away from Lumberton, North Carolina, according to the weather records, the temperature was running about 38 degrees at night, slightly higher than 50 in the daytime. Members of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan were all set to hold a rally in a location they had rented for the event near Maxton, North Carolina, Big Field. And like I said, the rally was not a secret. The date and time had been well known throughout Robertson County. Everyone knew about it. Bob Fisher, the chief of police in Maxton, sent letters to different law enforcement agencies and departments, the North Carolina Highway Patrol, and even the FBI, requesting help and assistance dealing with the situation. The chief had clearly said he was opposed to the Klan and his request, but the rally was to be held on private property and he really had very little he could say about it. News of the upcoming rally had both the Black community and the Native American community enraged and excited for a confrontation. A lot of women and family members pleaded with their husbands and brothers and fathers and sons to just stay home, stay out of harm's way, and away from the obvious trouble. But many of them did not. A lot of them felt there had to be some form of confrontation, a show of force to protect their community. The number of Klan members, the number of Lumbee Indians who attended the event varies depending on who you talk to or what document you're reading that detail the event. Cole had been warned by local law enforcement that his public speeches and demonstrations would provoke a violent reaction from the Lumbee tribe, and he kind of blew it off. Undeterred, he insisted this rally would be a significant operation and a success. Catfish Cole predicted 5,000 Klanmen would be in attendance, and they would all be there to remind the Lumbee Indians and the tribe of what exactly their place was, according to Cole. Now, Catfish Cole's followers apparently, realizing that the Lumbee would use the rally to muster together their own show of force, kept a lot of them, of the expected 5,000 individuals, from showing up. Most sources list the number to closer to 100 Klan members who attended the rally. But when the numbers changed, they changed rapidly. The rally attendees brought a large banner with the letters KKK embroidered and written across them. In addition, they had also brought a portable generator to power a small PA system that also powered a single bare light bulb as part of their equipment. When the meeting started, an arc of dim light that didn't spread very far, but was enough for the Klansmen to kind of see that, whoops, we're surrounded by as many as 1,000 Lumbee Native Americans. Several of the younger Lumbees tribe members, some of whom were armed, had enveloped and enclosed and moved in on the Klansmen. The immediate goal was, they thought, to take out the light bulb hanging on the radio antenna on Cole's car. The fighting started. A gunshot was heard, and the single bulb ended up being shattered, pushing the entire open field area into a cold, dark winter night. In the sudden blackness, Lumbee descended upon the field, yelling, firing guns up in the air. And remember when I said the numbers would drop drastically? Now this is where they dropped. A lot of the assent on the Klansmen by the Lumbee Indians ran a lot of them off, and they scattered out and about. Some ran to police protection from the officers surrounding the field just off the private property. Others, including Catfish Cole, simply took to the woods. Catfish had attempted to flee in his own car, but it quickly got stuck, so he left it. Not only did he leave his car behind, he also left his wife and his children in the vehicle, as Cole took to the woods on foot without them. And it's no surprise that this was kind of the last straw for Carolyn Cole, who would later file for divorce. Now, in attendance at the rally, not only were newspaper reporters and magazine photographers, but a Life magazine photographer was on the scene to document the incident. And it turned into a very big story in Life magazine later on. The Klan disappeared quickly into the night, abandoning their fallen flags, crosses, and other items for the safety of the woods or police protection. What could have been a massacre turned out to be basically a miracle, because there were only a few minor injuries and nobody was killed. This event quickly made national headlines. Life magazine carried two separate articles on the incident. In addition, letters started pouring in from all over the country and the world supporting the Lumbee Indians. Other news photographers who were already on the scene had documented the victory over the Klan celebration. Images of triumphant Lumbees holding up the abandoned KKK banner and other signs were published in newspapers and magazines worldwide. Simon Oxendine, who was a Lumbee Native American, a very well-known and very well-liked Lumbee Native American, and he also was a World War II veteran. He appeared in Life magazine, smiling with the KKK banner wrapped around his shoulders. The rout of the Klan itself fully galvanized the Lumbee community in its stand against such things. The Ku Klux Klan continued to be active in North Carolina up into the 1960s. There was a resurgence of the Klan that was attempted once more in the late 80s and early 90s. And I attended some of those rallies as a law enforcement officer and watched and listened to some of the bizarre speeches they made. The Klan traveled, marched, and rallied throughout North and South Carolina and Georgia. But one thing you can absolutely be positive about, the Ku Klux Klan never held another public meeting in Robertson County. And of course, the Klan didn't die out that night in 1958, but it did certainly learn to stay out of Indian country. The Battle of Hayes Pond was not the first violent confrontation that ended severely for Catfish Cole. Dr. Perry, a African-American doctor in Monroe, North Carolina, was rumored to be financing the local chapter of the NAACP. Because of this, he received quite a few death threats from Klan members. In 1957, Robert F. Williams, the president of the local chapter of the NAACP, formed a local chapter of the National Rifle Association. The primarily African-American chapter was referred to as the Black Armed Guard. It was composed mostly of World War II veterans who began organizing for self-defense and teaching self-defense, and they guarded Dr. Perry's house in shifts. Not mentioning race, the group had contacted the National Rifle Association asking for a charter. They stating that they were a group of veterans who wanted to continue training just in case they were called on to serve once more. The National Rifle Association granted the charter. On October 5th, 1957, Catfish Cole held a rally near Monroe, North Carolina. After the rally, a motorcade was put together with Catfish in the front, and they headed to Dr. Perry's house, accompanied by shooting, shouting, yelling, firing guns in the air, and at some places along the way. When they reached Dr. Perry's house, the motorcade began firing at the doctor's home. Now, members of the NRA chapter, who had set up a few low-key fortified positions, after the Klan members first started taking shots, the Black Armed Guard returned fire much more accurately and from places of safety and security, and the Klan turned and ran. They knew when they were outgunned. The city government in Monroe soon after, I mean the very next day, made Klan motorcades illegal and almost any type of parade as well without police approval beforehand. Now, after this unexpected resistance and action that happened in Monroe County, North Carolina, that's when Catfish Cole directed his attention to the Lumbees in Robertson County. And after the Hayes Pond incident, Catfish Cole ended up being arrested and convicted for inciting a riot that January there at Hayes Pond. He ended up serving 18 months of prison time. Once out of prison, he moved to Portsmouth, Virginia, and there he worked as an unlicensed illegal private detective before being charged with that and returning to North Carolina to operate a print shop. In a final attempt in 1966 to take over control of the North Carolina Ku Klux Klan, he ended up being banned from all their activities. James William Catfish Cole, at the age of 44, died on July 7, 1967, from injuries sustained in a high-speed automobile accident. 2 weeks before he died, Cole was arrested on felony charges with two other men connected to a cross-burning near the Greensboro home of the Reverend Frank Williams. At the time of his death, Cole was free on bond, awaiting the trial. And we assume that he ended up having to go to a much higher court to answer the charges brought against him. From time to time, you'll hear incidents and stories in the media about the Klan and the resurgence of the Klan and the like. Well, I take some comfort in knowing that that's a very small minority of individuals. There are stupid people everywhere. And if you can't deal with your neighbors, and if you can't deal with the neighbors in your community and the people that live there, you're going to have a very rough life. So that's our Shade of Blue story for this weekend. hope you found it interesting. A lot of people are not aware of catfish coal anymore, which is kind of a good thing. But I do think we need to know that catfish did go up against a minority group and got his tail whooped really good on several occasions by individuals standing up for what is right. So in the coming week, if you have the opportunity to stand up for what is right, go ahead and take that opportunity. Help somebody out. Stand up. Let it be known how you feel. Stand up and take the lead and do something good. If more people did something good and helped other people out, no matter who they are, as much as you possibly can, the world would be a better place. And as I said last week, we'd probably have fewer new Shades of Blue stories. But don't worry, the old Shade of Blue stories are still out there, and it's just a matter of doing the research. And I'm come back next Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here in the United States for another Shade of Blue story from our past that we hopefully will learn something from. You can find out a little bit more by going to my website, scottlunsfordauthor.com, or felonfile.com, where you can find out a little bit more about me and some of the books that I've written. And if you like, pick up a t-shirt or a coffee mug. Remember, nothing says leave me alone early in the morning than drinking your coffee from a Felon File coffee mug while wearing your Felon File t-shirt. Victoria, go ahead and close us out. We'll talk to you all next Saturday. Tune in again at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Bye, y'all.
You have been listening to the Felon File Podcast with your host, Scott Lunsford. For more information on this podcast or Scott's books and writings, go to scottlunsfordauthor.com and felonfile.com. Scott can also be contacted at these web pages. This is Victoria, your producer. Thank you for listening. 2-1. End.